baby. It's my aux cord. The vibes are high. It's the Fan Morning Show. It's Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ailish Forfar, Jeannie Bunkus, Blake Murphy, and our fourth member of the show, our guy who's going to be cold as ice this weekend, Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst, calling Bills Patriots on Saturday night. Good morning, Charles. How are we today?
I'm wonderful, Ailish. Hello, guys. How you doing? How's everyone? And I need advice right out of the gate. Okay, how does one stay warm? Let's get it. Trying to do a game on Saturday night.
We just talked about that. It might have to do with a little blue pill.
Yeah, you don't do what Bart Scott's out there telling people to do, Charles.
Did you hear that, Charles?
There are those little packs you can break in half and stick in your shoe, stick in your gloves. I don't know, man. It's a lot of space heaters. That's all we got. We're certainly not going to give you the Bart
that's
Scott
not all we got.
Recommendation. No, I'm not. I'm not telling Charles Davis to do that.
See, you can tell that we're from Canada because, Charles, when you asked us that question, everyone got so excited to give you an answer, right? Like, an American person is asking us how to stay warm. Oh, like, who goes first? We're all there. I'll say this. I am from the coldest place on this show. I am from up north, so I will take the hammer on this. Charles, it's just all about layers. Layers, layers, layers. They'll never do you wrong. Layers, okay. Layers, layers, and footwear. You got to make sure you're wearing boots. Have the ugly... I don't know what you're allowed to wear because you're on television and it's like they're going to show you at some point. But so long as you can rock a nice big pair of Sorel boots, you will be fine. Yeah. It's all about the boots and it's all about the layers. Today is not the day to show off the fancy footwork. Today is not the day to show off the nice boots. This is the day of, hey, I got to be outside for 4+ hours. You better believe that I'm bringing heavy boots, heavy layers. You'll never think about the cold. You'll be totally fine.
Oh, my God. I love that. I absolutely love it. Thank you all for the advice right off the top. But that right there, the reason I'm grinning so big is I had a conversation with Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator with the Bills, the other day, you know, in preparation for the game. And in the middle of it, he said, hey, before we go any farther, what are you wearing Saturday? Mm-hmm. I was like, what do you care? He goes, hey, man, I've known you for years. He said, you tend to try and, you know, look nice and the whole deal. He said, let me tell you something. Yeah. Saturday night, not the night to try and look nice. He said, if you don't get some boots and layer up, I mean, you guys were just like next to each other, perfect advice, the same things. And he said, if I see you coming in here trying to look fancy, I'm just going to shake my head and say, well, he won't make it through the first half.
No.
So, it's all about your extremities. If your extremities are warm, then you will be warm. Like, if your fingers and your toes are cold, it's game over. So, yeah, I agree with JD.
Neck warmer.
Invest in your ears, too. Yeah. Get a little earmuffs. Ooh, a good toque.
Yes, good toque. Well, good toque.
You can't do earmuffs because he's got the – he's going to have
them
a headset.
Over your headset. Your headset are earmuffs, actually, so that's kind of helpful.
Yeah, it's a little bit of helpfulness. But, I know – Sorry, Charles, what were you saying?
Yeah, what I was going to say, I think I'm going to go knit cap with it, too. You know, the cap up top. And he also, he said, hey, man, I want to see one of those fancy things. Don't go fedora or anything like that. Man, you got to put it tight on the head.
Definitely not.
And he said, the headset are your earmuffs. So he said, you go with that. He said, you can never have enough hand and feet warmers. You're going to be that. Uh-huh. That's how you got to go. And I told him, I said, well, is it okay that I asked, you know, the people who set up our booth, if they could bring in space heaters and make sure they come in on an 18-wheeler truck? And he said, absolutely. He said, whatever it's going to take to get it done. He said, but if you try and go fancy, Dan, dude, you got no shot. So thank you. Thank you all very much. I appreciate
you're gonna
it.
Do fine. You're gonna do fine. It's just I am now. We did what are our narratives that we care about most this weekend, and we talked about this game, and I will bring you in our narrative of this game. But now all I will be doing is Charles Davis watch of whenever they show you in the booth of going like, does Charles look cold? Did they get him enough space heaters? Did they make sure that he's got enough hand warmers? Let's make sure that Charles is taken care of. All right, that's what we do on the show. This is a team. We look out for one another. We will absolutely be making sure that you are warm and that you are safe. But outside of caring about you and how warm you are.
Very much.
Outside of that.
Real quick, before we before we get to the narrative of the game, all I've thought about this week, did you guys ever see that movie Mystery Alaska?
Yes.
Of course.
It's a movie about it. It's, right, but the hockey, right?
Yeah.
So, do you remember when they decided to bring in Little Richard to sing the national anthem? And the mayor of the town went to visit Little Richard in his bus. And he said, "Mr. Richard, how are you doing?" And Little Richard just looked at him and went, "I'm cold." Yeah. That's me right there.
Yeah, he's in like a leopard skin blanket in his trailer, and he's got the headband on and everything, and that's it. Yeah. I'm cold.
Yeah. and the way he said it spoke volumes. He might as well have written a 1,000-word paper on being cold, but he encapsulated it right there with two words: "I'm cold."
So we had a really weird weather game between these two teams already, and it seemed to favor the Patriots. Yeah. I guess let's just start here. Do you think that it favors them again this time around?
I don't think so, because last time the weather was wind. You know, it was cold, but the cold wasn't the issue. It was the wind. You know, how it was going to play into the game, and the Patriots decided to respect the wind and say, "Listen, I got a rookie quarterback. He's got a good arm, but not an arm like Josh Allen's, although, okay, who really does in the league, right? I mean, you can make an argument with Mahomes and, you know, a couple others, but Josh is an elite arm. Mac Jones has a good arm." And they decided not to deal with that. And you remember, they got the big run early with Damian Harris, and they didn't even kick the extra point because they were at that end where they decided you don't mess with the wind at that end. So they went for two and got it. They respected it. It worked for them. They controlled the ball enough. But if you go back and look at the stats from the game, Buffalo was right there. The reason Buffalo lost the game, it wasn't because New England just absolutely dominated them, even though it felt like it because they ran it 46 times for 222 yards. New England was like 2 of 12 on third downs. So that's not going to put you over the top. Buffalo struggled on third down, but what really killed them was the red zone. We count red zone, the number one stat in red zone we count is how many touchdowns you get red zone drives. And they were 1 of 4, meaning one touchdown, 4 attempts. That was the killer for them. And they still had a chance late in the ball game, and they didn't play their best game. Now flip it around to when they played New England, it was cold. Wind wasn't a factor at all, and Josh Allen went off. Yeah. You know, and they came out in that game. Let's face it, if you were a team, like all of you, you know, when we played and when we dealt with different things, if you were just taking it for a long time and finally decide, "I'm not going to take it anymore," and come out swinging, that's what Buffalo did. They were like, "You're not going to run over us this time. We're going to be the aggressive ones." And they were. That's why I don't think in this ball game, because from what I'm hearing, it's going to be brutally cold, but the wind isn't going to be a factor. I don't see an advantage now.
So let's say that this is favoring Josh Allen, and everything you just said does lean that way. If you're Bill Belichick, how and what are you trying to do to shut Josh Allen down this time around?
I think that with the quarterback run game, you know, because Josh will run the quarterback power, the quarterback sweeps, the zone reads, things of that nature, you don't hesitate with him. If you suspect that he's got a chance to run the football, you've got to go get him right now. You cannot lay back and let him make the decisions and force you into guessing about what he's going to do. Don't guess, just go get him. If he pitches it off and gives it to someone else, well, so be it. But don't let him shred you. Because he absolutely will. That's the first thing. The second thing is him throwing the football. If Buffalo's going to stay true to who they are, which is throwing the ball first and running it second, it's not just Josh now. Now it's the receivers. Because you guys, didn't you just say it? Extremities are the key, right? Are your fingers warm enough? Can you handle it? If their hands are cold and not supple and they have a lot of tips and the ball goes off their hands, that can turn into interceptions and completions and things of that nature. So all that comes into play as well, because we know how much velocity Josh has on the football. And in a game like this, he doesn't want to be overly cute in trying to take things off, do this, do that. These receivers didn't have to do a little bit more body catching in this game than they would hand catching. So we'll just see how it plays out.
Yeah, I can't wait for this game. I'm not worried about the way Josh Allen's going to play outside of the... He's had those moments, right, where he has the head-scratching decisions. He makes those plays that they break you or they change the course of a game, and you start to say, ugh, not this again, not this ghost creeping up. But I think that, to me, it's you got to make sure that Josh Allen just can't run freely in this game. I want to see those pass catchers that you just outlined actually catch it in the cold. That's what I'm going to try to test if I'm Belichick. I'm saying, okay, beat me deep, make him put it up in the air. Let's see if we can get some turnovers. Let's see if we can win it that way, because I don't know. To me, Charles, do you see a way the Patriots can win this game outside of winning the turnover battle and running the ball effectively?
Yeah, actually I do, and it centers in on this. They're going to need to run the ball effectively, but I don't know if they can run it the way they did in the first win, which is just absolutely, you know, we're coming and we're going to run it anyway. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Mac Jones actually throw the ball a lot more on first down than maybe they have in recent games or throughout the season. Because we always talk about third down being the key statistic. How'd they do on third downs? You know, were you 50%? You got to get to third down and make it work for you. Because if you look through the season, the Patriots, third and seven or more, I think they're last in the league in conversions. They've got to win first and second down. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that the Bills stacked the line of scrimmage on first down. Mac Jones maybe comes out and throws a little, you know, controlled passing game, trying to get them, you know, easy completions, a little bit of yardage, so that you're setting up third down is less than third and four. Because if they can get to that, the conversion rate goes up to near 60%. And that's what they're going to need in this ball game. Because they can do those things, then they can mix in the run as well, and then maybe it becomes a little more predominant. But I just don't know about how they did it the first game, where they said, hey, let's line up and just run at them, run at them, run at them. Remember, that was a 64-yard run that was mixed into that 222. The rest of the night wasn't as easy sledding as maybe it seemed.
So, Charles, the earlier game on that Saturday is Vegas and Cincinnati. It's one we haven't got to talk a lot about yet. Derek Carr does not have a lot of playoff experience for a guy who's eight seasons in and is, you know, pushing 31 years old. What do you expect from a guy like that who is a veteran technically but doesn't have a lot of experience there and has some, you know, uncertainty about if his future's with Las Vegas?
So if we say that he doesn't have a lot of experience, would zero games count? Because remember, when they went to the playoffs last time, he broke his ankle right before
the
playoff game. So this is his first one. I think, fortunately for him, at 31, he's going to be, you know, excited beyond belief, of course. But I think at 31, he'll be able to handle a little bit better, maybe 21 in your first playoff experience. Here's the other thing. Our crew did that game early this year when Cincinnati went to Las Vegas. And it was a close game at the half. And in the second half, Cincinnati pretty much ran them off their feet. Joe Mixon just kept pounding the football. And finally they cracked, and the defense handled things pretty well. What I'm most interested in this game with Las Vegas is, you think they expended a little bit of energy and emotion on Sunday night to get there? Is getting there enough for them? Did they use it all up just to find a way to get to the playoffs, to make the move to Cincinnati? And the second part of Cincinnati has a bunch of youngsters, their first playoff experience too. And they didn't play them last week. Remember, they sat on Burrow and a few other guys didn't even play. Is Cincinnati equipped and ready to go? Right now, I think Cincinnati's a better football team. But playoff football's a funny animal. So we're going to find out. Did they use too much emotion, meaning Las Vegas, or are they riding the wave right now? Because the season that they've had, in a lot of ways, we'd say there's no way they should be there. Between the John Gruden stuff, Henry Ruggs tragedy, you know, everything else that happened with that ball club, Rich Bisaccia taking over, you know, it's been amazing. And here they are. And when you look at their stats, there's no way they should be in the playoffs. I mean, their stats point to a team that should have finished in last place in their division. It's unbelievable how they've overcome that. So I give them a lot of credit. But I do think Cincinnati is a better team.
I do, too. And to me, this is a game where if Mixon can start to move the ball, if they can move the chains with Mixon, it's over, they're dead. Like it's just not going to be a contest. I also worry you talk about the emotion of playing in that game, the Raiders overcoming that, getting to this playoff game, Derek Carr getting into a playoff game. But then also just that went to overtime. Those teams were beat. That was one of the stories of that overtime, yeah, was who's going to outlast one another. These guys are dead on their feet. And now the Raiders have to play in a short week in a playoff game against what could be a physical style game where Mixon is running it down their throats and trying to counteract that pass rush. I don't know. I feel like if the Bengals lose this game, they actually sort of blew it, because I don't know how Oakland is going to just recover physically in time to make this a ball game, Charles.
Yeah, I think that's a big question mark for us, and that's what I was talking about before. Did they use everything they had just to get there? Or is it one of those years where they continue to ride the wave because they've overcome so many other things? Why not keep going? You know, let's see. But I suspect more of the former than the latter. Now, the other part that no one's going to talk about for the team is Rich Bisaccia is the interim coach, got him to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Mike Mayock is general manager, now his own man. Do they get to keep their jobs? And a lot of people feel like if they don't win this playoff game, that'll open the door for Mark Davis to make changes if he wants to. But in a lot of us would feel like, boy, they did a heck of a job. I don't know why you would want to change that part and keep trying to add it. So, full disclosure, those guys are my friends, you know? So I'm rooting hard for them. But the nature of the business, we know what it's like. And by the way, where are they located? Las Vegas? Yeah. You think they don't want a glitzy coach? It's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's a great point. So this Niners game against Dallas, this is just, wow, the 90s are back. The 90s are back. Here we have it. What a game. Charles, what I want to ask you is there a more talented matchup this weekend than that Niners offense against that Cowboys? And is there anything you're more excited for than Debo versus Parsons?
No, I love that. Absolutely love that. And both of those guys have a good chance of being, well, they have an excellent chance of being named All-Pro this year, not just Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. Debo Samuel is in a spot where trying to pick that third receiver, you know, because Cooper Kupp and Devontae Adams are going to get the first two spots. That third receiver, a lot of momentum for Justin Jefferson because of the numbers he had, and he's been terrific. But Debo Samuel's done everything. Now Micah Parsons on the flip side, he's Debo Samuel. Defense end, linebacker, middle linebacker, wherever they need him. Heck, he might start a nose guard if they need him to. So that's what they do, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Where I'm most interested in this game, two things. Number one, can San Francisco run the football with the authority we expect? Because Kyle Shanahan, for all his mastery of offense and play calling, he takes his ego and sets it aside if the running game is working. See, I know a number of offensive coordinators and play callers that they have that fancy, you know, menu in front of them with all their plays, and they want to show you how smart they are by calling all of them. Kyle Shanahan, if the play is working, he'll keep running it. It's not bothering him. Remember when they went to the Super Bowl and they ran Green Bay and Minnesota into submission, and it seemed like the same play over and over and over? He'll do that, and here Elijah Mitchell has that opportunity to do it for San Francisco. For Dallas, Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, getting a lot of attention to be a head coach again. He's transformed that defense. They got to be prepared to hang in there and deal with the run game, first and foremost. And remember, Debo's a part of the run game. He's not going to sit out there catching passes. He'll take handoffs like a tailback, too. This is going to be a fun one. The second thing, Kyle Shanahan tried to talk to his team about the Cowboys-49ers rivalry. And the last time they met in the playoffs was in the 90s. And he said all he got back with blank looks. Why? Well, coach, San Francisco Dallas was a thing? Yeah, it was a thing. It was a big thing. It was? Because these kids weren't around for it. Yeah. They didn't know.
Well, Charles, you know, we're only about 4-hour drive from Buffalo. If you need us to bring you anything, we need you to borrow a coat, some mitts, toe warmers, you let us know. I'll get in a car and I'll drive it to you. Okay.
She means
it. I appreciate it. Very, very much.
Well, we wish you all the best. Stay warm. Okay. We're excited to watch your call. Go Bills. Charles Davis, a pleasure as always. Fourth member of our team. Good luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot. And again, thank you so much for the great advice. I will be following all of it and giving it my best shot. You guys take care. We'll talk next week.
You too. Thanks, Charles. Charles Davis, NFL on CBS color analyst, calling Bills, Patriots on Saturday night, and our best friend of the show, for sure.
I like this point about Kyle Shanahan's kind of willingness to go wherever the offense is producing rather than forcing, you know, coming in and forcing a game plan. I think Debo, I know Charles kind of had the aside there about, oh, Debo's part of the run game too. I think he's such a great example of that. Debo rushed the ball 6 times over his first 8 games this year. He's rushed it 53 times over the 8 since. Like, this is something where whether they stumbled on it or knew it was always there and just hadn't gone to it or whatever, they've really embraced that as a part of their attack in the second half of the season. And I think that's a big chunk of why their offense kind of took off after, you know, from week 10 onward there.
I love thinking about a NFL coach on the other sideline from Kyle Shanahan, and in this case, Mike McCarthy, getting upset like when you would play your friend in Madden who was great at one play.
Going, yeah.
You're going to just do the same play every time? How is that even fun for you? That makes me happy to no end. So, yes, let me see it. I love Micah Parsons and I love Debo Samuel. It hurts me as a Seahawks fan to enjoy the Niners to this degree. I really do believe that Debo Samuel is the best receiver in football because he is just not just a receiver. He's a running back. He's everything. If that guy stays healthy, to me, he is the most talented guy at the position in the NFL. Over Cooper Kupp, over Davante Adams, all those different things. He just does he plays with a physicality that I wish DK Metcalf did. I really do. And I like DK. And I'm a huge Metcalf fan. I think Samuel is better. They do a redraft, that should be the number one pick. Same with this redraft. They do a redraft. Micah Parsons, he's not going where he went. He might be a Jacksonville Jaguar. Honest to God, he's that good. So I can't wait for this matchup. I think it's super interesting. I think it's awesome to watch freaks play professional sports. And those two guys are as freaky as it gets. So that's something to chew on. I think, Blake, you have something else to chew on.
Yeah, I do. And we're going to take it just back to basketball very quickly. And, you know, Charles mentioned that, hey, maybe guys like Debo and Parsons could be playing their way, not just into Pro Bowl, and in Parsons' case, Defensive Rookie of the Year, but also All-Pro. So I want to take it back to the NBA just for a second. We're going to talk to Michael Grange at 8, and we'll probably touch on some of the Warriors stuff in the Wake and Rake at 8:30. But the Warriors lost again last night. 1-5 against the spread in their last 6. 2-5 without Draymond on the year. JD, you and I were talking a little bit this morning before the show about Draymond's importance there. And you brought up, hey, All-NBA. And I immediately went to, well, of course he's going to make All-NBA. He's so important. And then I looked a little closer. So you're something to chew on here is, what is the minimum points per game you can get and still be in the All-NBA conversation? Because Draymond is averaging 7.9. Draymond's never been a high scorer, but Draymond's All-NBA season, his lowest scoring one was 10.2 points per game. So this is a pretty significant drop off. Only 4 times has a player averaging fewer points than Draymond made All-NBA. 3 of them were Ben Wallace, and one of them was Chris Boucher mentor Dennis Rodman. So rare territory if Draymond can push it there. But when you look at how the Warriors have looked with and without him, boy, does he look like obviously Steph is the key piece, but Draymond is remarkably important and probably right there in the DPOY conversation as well as All-NBA.
Draymond, this has been, we do this a lot in professional sports, is the absence makes the heart grow fonder thing, where someone misses games, and that's when we really start to realize the impact that they have. I don't know if that's necessarily the full case for Draymond in his career, because we all understand how great he is, but a couple of seasons ago, we were all looking at that Draymond contract saying, boy, maybe Golden State should be trying to get out from underneath this thing. Maybe Golden State needs a rejuvenation. They need to move off Draymond, and Draymond's slipping, and he can't score, and he's going to get older, he's going to age, and blah, 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 blah. That has not been the case. When it comes to All-NBA, though, to me, this is the toughest thing. He's probably got to get a forward spot, because Jokic is a lock for first team. Embiid, I would say, is a lock for second team.
Absolute lock,
And then you have Rudy Gobert, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Draymond sort of in this third group. And statistically, you can't even come close with Draymond to those other two guys, well, especially Kat. Rudy Gobert is offering you a lot of that defense plus better statistics. I don't know. It's really, really hard. And yet, if you ask me, hey, JD, it's a must-win game, Draymond or any of these other two guys, and look at what has happened to the Warriors over the last couple of games when he hasn't been in or he hasn't been healthy, yeah, it's just it's really, really, really tough. I think that voters will probably skirt the process a bit here and end up putting him in. And I don't think that points per game will matter with Draymond. To me, it's going to be the other stuff. The assists per game, the rebounds per game, the defensive metrics, and just frankly, the wins and loss the column when he's in games versus the ones where he's out. But to me, yes, he needs to be all NBA if the season ended today. But I'm skeptical of it based on the depth of his position, which is strange to say considering it feels like the last 5 years of the NBA has been about the depth of the center.
Yeah, so that's something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Maybe we'll chew on that with Grange a little bit later, too, as we kind of set up the NBA and the weekend ahead for the Toronto Raptors. But before that, we're going to set up the Toronto Maple Leafs weekend ahead. They're playing the St. Louis Blues. We're going to talk to Cam Jansen next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. Ailish picked all the songs today. It's her Oxcord Friday. It upsets me, though, remembering that she's picking songs from when I was in university or at the end of high school all day, and that she was probably 4 years old. She's trying to vibe these things.
No.
Like, I don't know how. Yeah, it's just, I was a lot older. It hurts. It hurts. It hurts. Our next guest would have, I think he's like pretty close to my age, so he's a pretty similar spot with these things. Cam Jansen. Former NHL forward and co-host of the Cam and Strick podcast and co-host of Hot Take Central on 590 The Fan of St. Louis, which is kind of a bit of a beef that we're going to have today, which is the true fan 590. Cam Jansen,
yeah,
thanks for jumping
on,
man.
Well, you guys are the true one, let's be honest here, especially when it comes to hockey.
You're
going to force the hockey out of the guys down in St. Louis, you know? So, yeah.
I can't believe they gave you a spot.
Exactly. Hey, man, listen, I'm telling you, in St. Louis is different. Like, you know, hot, the Blues are great. They're hot right now. They love their Blues here, but there's a lot of other sports going on, even in high school and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you got to try to be well-rounded, but I'm absolutely not.
Yeah, those guys that do the Volunteers football show, you're like, hey, what's up, guys? They're like, get out of here, nerd. Like, what are you doing in here? That's hockey take. You don't belong here. You're like, I'm sorry. Can I just get 5 minutes? just five minutes.
Sorry about that. Yeah. I'll read up on my football.
I'll be quick. I promise. Okay, so maybe you had a little heat around the station after the Bobby Clark interview, though, because, boy, that was fire. I got to tell you, so I am somebody who complains constantly about how hockey players and hockey people don't take enough shots at one another and that it's too nice. Like, we just had Zach Hyman in town about 2 weeks ago. I don't even know anymore. COVID times, my schedule is all screwed up. And Zach's on the ice, and he's talking with Wayne Simmons, and they're asking about each other's families, and it's very cute, and it's very nice, and social media loves it. But I keep going, you know, where's the hate? Where's the hate? Where's the hate? Maybe just don't like each other a little. Were you expecting Bobby Clark to go off like that? Let's just start with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of was. Why does he care, right? I mean, listen. Here's how I look at it with the podcast thing. I don't want to. We don't take advantage of anybody. This dude's been in the game a long decades. He doesn't care. If he wants to get the story straight, he's going to talk about it. Why wouldn't he? He's down in Florida playing golf with, like, no hockey people. He doesn't care. He's got his own little world down there. And he's like, no, this is what happened. And why wouldn't those old school cats do that? Just like Neil Smith came on our podcast, and he's like, no, this is what happened. But if you get, like, a guy like Trevor Zegras on, a young kid, and he says something corny or stupid, we're not going to put it out there. Why put him in a jam? So, look, these old school guys, you're right. They need to go out and set the story straight. Because when I'm that age, if something goes down, I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. My favorite part about it was just thinking about how long Bobby's been sitting on some of this stuff. Because those guys go back. You know, like, those guys have known each other for a long time. And him sitting there without Hextall in the room to defend himself and just going in is, it's just incredible. I loved it so much. I think you guys did a great job. I think you guys do a great job in general. And again, that is the Cam and Strick podcast, which is a must subscribe for hockey fans. So let me ask you this then before we move off it. You get one person in hockey to tell the full truth about how they feel about someone. Who do you pick?
Oh, gosh, man, that's a loaded. you know, if I could pick anybody's brain and just go or be a fly on the wall, of course it's going to be my guy, Lou Lamoriello, who I absolutely adore, who I just looked
good
up to
pick
as like a father figure, you know, and he just was so, everything about him, I learned so much just being around that guy. Every time he came in the room, I'd just dissect him, just like he would everybody else on the team, you know. Like, he just knows everything about everybody. So if I could ever be a fly on the wall and just see how things went down over the years with him and the contract negotiations when it comes to bringing the Russians over, this, that, and the other, there's so many different things. I would love to be able to pick his brain, but that's a vault, and we all know it. And but, you know, he'd be one of the bigger guys. And of course, just any guy that's been in the league a long time, that's been through, you know, playing as a captain and winning a cup and then going into the management situation position and going through all the drama, like any one of those old school GMs are always fun to get on, because again, they're getting old and they're like, I don't care. Here, this is what went down. I'm setting the story straight. So that's why we like to get those old school cats on.
Yeah, I feel even stupid for asking the question now, because Lou is obviously the guy, because he knows where all the bodies are buried.
This is
such a good answer. And like, I thought we would really be wasting our bullet if we asked Thomas Cabrera how he felt about you, right?
Well, no, I mean, look, I actually played with him for a little bit in yeah. Jersey, and look, yeah. It is what it is. It was late, and. Look, the fan base up there wanted me dead, and I don't blame
you. I wanted you dead big time.
Me too. Yeah. I know. I'm like, you guys are screaming for Belak to get me who we, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he did. We kicked the crap out of each other, and it was entertaining. So it is what it is. But Cavs, man, that kind of stuff happens, and I think he'd be okay. But initially, he was not very happy with me, of course.
So the USA roster was announced yesterday. A lot of guys that we had to do a little bit of Wikipedia-ing, little hockey DB searches. But, you know, I guess we've talked about this up here, who's going to make the Canadian team. But you got a chance to look at the American roster. Are you bummed? Obviously, probably. How bummed are you about no pros at the Olympics? And what are you expecting from Beijing coming in just less than a month?
Well, I don't know. Like, look, the guys are like loud now, right? And they're all like, "Oh, we would have gone. Well, why didn't you speak up earlier?" Like, it's not an easy situation. Let's be honest here. And if I'm like, if I'm a wife and I have kids, and you know, my husband's been in the league a long time, they got money, they've been to the Olympics before, I'd probably be like, "No, I don't want you to go to China. I don't want you to have to sit there for 5 weeks while we're over here." Knowing, trying to get you back over here because you have COVID. And look, you're probably going to get COVID over there. So the risk is so weird. It's very bizarre. If I'm a young kid, I'd suck it up back. I don't care. Let's go. Even if I'm like, have to quarantine the whole time. Like, sometimes you just got to go do what you got to do. But yeah, it's a little depressing. I always want to see guys compete with the USA on their jersey, with the Canada on their jersey. Like, that is such a cool thing. And you want to see the best of the best. But these times are so weird. They really are. And I know Marchant and guys are saying, well, they should go over anyway, and then, you know, they should retire and then go over and then come back. I'm like, what? No. No, you play for your team, okay? Winning the Stanley Cup's the biggest thing going on. This whole thing's a mess. You couldn't go. The NHL made a decision. It is what it is. Don't complain now about it. But on the other hand, it would be nice to go see the best of the best, put that USA on, and root for your country.
Yeah, we all want to see best and best. It's still a tough pill to swallow. Here in Canada, we've been dying for it forever because this is our thing, right? This is the one thing we're supposed to be best at. I just would look at it a little bit maybe differently if I was an American hockey fan, just from the standpoint of this might be the best team you guys have ever had. Like, from a Canadian standpoint, I can tell you this, Cam. It was the one positive of no pros at the Olympics was not having the potential of Austin Matthews ruining his legacy in Toronto by going bar down against Team Canada in a big spot and eliminating us from an Olympic game, and then having to watch him in a Leafs sweater for the rest of the season going, oh, that's cool, yes, hey, Austin Matthews, great, good to have you back, buddy. Like, it could have been bad. Yeah. Could have been bad for us.
They were
a real threat.
Yeah, but you know how this goes. It's going to be Finland that does it to you, you know. Yeah. It's going to be somebody squeaks in and just surprises somebody. Like, again, USA would have been loaded. Canada would have been loaded. The Finns, the Swedes, they're all loaded. And so anything really could have happened if you play the right system and you guys are all on board. The teams were so skilled. The top big teams, of course, big countries were so skilled. Anybody could have upset anybody. But again, man, oh, man, it's just having all the guys together and competing like that. I was pumped up for it. But then you sit back and you look at the situation, you're like, yeah, okay. It's just, it's a shame. Hopefully they could get the, you know, people are always talking about, like, just trying to get the best players to be competitive in some sort of tournament, World Cup, whatever the case is. We're craving that. Hopefully they can put something together coming up here. But missing the Olympics, man, that is pretty tough pill to swallow. You're right.
So our Toronto Maple Leafs are headed to St. Louis for a game Saturday night. Blues are 15-3-2 at home. Leafs are 9-5-2 on the road. Kind of going on a little bit of a cold streak for Toronto. They've been missing Mitch Marner. They've had a couple disappointing losses in the last couple games. What do you see this matchup being on Saturday? And do the Blues have the upper hand here?
Well, right now, I think the Blues have the upper hand on a lot of teams. They're just really good. Now, you got to – COVID rocked them again, right? I think David Perron's had COVID like 5 times. He's out again. Boy. So you got like your first power play unit already out. You got Colton Parayko, who logs 25 minutes. He's out. So anything could happen. Look, Toronto's loaded. They are so skilled. If Austin Matthews wants to take the game over, he's going to do it. A couple guys on that team could take games over. They're going to put on a show. It's going to be back and forth. Like, the Blues can't get into that kind of, like, that fast pace. They need to kind of slow guys down, hold on the puck. They know their style. It's different than Toronto. But I like seeing these two teams go at it. I actually miss back in the day watching them go at it all the time. But now just seeing just loaded up front, both teams, high offense, going at it. This is going to be exciting to watch. Anytime you can play the Maple Leafs, it's always fun. Everybody's watching. All of Canada's basically watching. And it's just good for hockey one way or the other down here in St. Louis. But yeah, no, it's going to be a good matchup. Hey, the Blues aren't – they're just not easy to deal with. They just find ways. And you got all these young kids coming up that are good too. They just fit the mold. They listen to Craig Berube, and they're like, oh, this is what I need to do. Here's your role. And they're like, okay. And they go do it. And they do it to a T. And it's actually very fun to watch. But, again, we got a lot of guys out. It's going to be a different kind of matchup, and the Blues might have their hands full.
Yeah, my buddy Mark Savard just is – he can't believe that the Blues are successful after he left, you know. He's not running the power play anymore. He's just shocked. He's just shocked that St. Louis has somehow found a way. Yeah, great guy. But he's very surprised that they're having success despite not having in the organization. And, yeah, Colton Parayko not being in, that's a bummer. All-time Leafs trade rumor legend based on purely only our fans putting him in trade rumors coming to the Leafs. Yeah, I know. But we got years out of it. We got years out of it. I'm curious to get your thoughts on Matthews, though, because you mentioned him, guy who can take over a game, one of the more exciting players in hockey. But I've been thinking about this the last couple of days as he's gone back to Arizona, and yeah, he's from a place where people don't really care about the game. The prodigal son comes home, and they can't even fill up half the arena there with friends, families, Canadians. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even get close. It's just done. And he plays for a Canadian team, and I know that south of the border, like when you guys have rivalry game night, for example, or whatever gets the national coverage, it's usually not Canadian hockey teams. Now there's no Olympic team, so you don't get Austin Matthews in the red, white, and blue and scoring goals for Team USA. How big of a star is he for United States hockey fans? Like, is he somebody that really moves the needle for people? I just don't know what he is to you guys in comparison to, say, someone like Patrick Kane.
No, dude, he moves the needle. Are you kidding?
Okay.
They just don't care down there. They don't even know what they're doing down there. All they're doing is playing golf. It's, you know, and they're just like, oh, it's slowed down down there. They don't care about hockey down there. And it is a problem. Like, how long, like, hasn't this experiment lasted long enough? It's not working. Yeah. Just not working down there. No one cares. You got Austin Matthews coming in town. He flies all over the ice. He is a symbol in so many ways. Everybody wants to see him. And they don't even sell out down there. I was packing this place in St. Louis whenever I was playing here just to play 3 minutes and get into a fight. The Blues fans are going crazy. And you can't bring people in to even see him. It's ridiculous. I feel bad for guys like my boy Clayton Keller, who's from St. Louis too. Like, he'd be a superstar in Toronto. I mean, a superstar in Toronto. And he's just buried down there. And they're terrible. So I don't know, man. I don't mean to bash him that much. I like Billy Armstrong too. He's a great guy. But I'm a realist. You guys understand, right?
Yeah, well, I've never thought the team should be there, so it is what it is. It's just tough when you are from, or you live in Toronto and you cover the Leafs, because it's one of those, yeah, the Coyotes should move, but also we did get Austin Matthews because they exist, right? It's this weird thing where Matthews goes to that arena and it's half full and you go, hey, you got to move it. But then he is there and you go, damn, what would the NHL, what would Leafs fans be right now without this guy? Like, it's such a weird one. He grew up playing on those little Lily lily pad things. Like, he didn't even play real hockey until, I don't know, he was like 13 years old or so. Yeah, it's amazing. Dude, it's an incredible story.
He didn't play real hockey. And listen, we're not skating on ponds in St. Louis either.
Yeah,
you know, we're not like, oh, here's December. Let's go work on our toe drag out in the pond that's not frozen over. You're gonna freeze to death because you're gonna fall through here. But we played roller hockey. We played roller hockey here. You played roller hockey and you started skating because you could take your roller blades, get those hard wheels, and fly around any park, any time, and it's basically free. You don't have to pay for ice. That's how we became hockey players. And then, of course, you start ice skating. But yeah, though. So, like, I get what you're saying with the Austin Matthews thing. It's so weird that he's from there and, like, oh, let's move these guys. But he was a product of that environment, too, growing up probably watching Phoenix play with Keith Tkachuk and those guys back in the 90s when they were actually really cool. So I don't know, man. It is what it is. I hate seeing them get just no attention and nobody cares down there. It's just, I don't know, it's somewhat depressing to me.
So yesterday the NHL announced their all-star rosters. Like, I had no idea it was coming. They just dumped it on us. I just feel like it's lost a lot of spark, a lot of luster. Nobody really tunes in as much. I don't know if that's pandemic related or just because of the new divisional structures. But do you think that players are just kind of meh about the All-Star weekend, the All-Star game now, and you know, just, I guess, the money is kind of the only thing that drives them?
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, look, especially after just, like, the Olympics are a different animal. Like, you're, like, going, and this means a ton, and it could change your life. Now, your life's already changed if you made the All-Star game, right? You're already, like, upper echelon tier. Like, it's cool, like, a credential. You're getting paid. You're fine. There's nothing changes in your life. You go to the Olympics and you kick butt and you win a medal, that's a game changer. So, no, they don't care. It's going to be fun for them. It's cool to, like, do goofy stuff and get some attention and be the elite of the elite. That's all cool for your ego and stuff. But, I mean, I can't see these guys caring that much. Now, they are in Vegas, right? It's in Vegas, isn't it? Now, that's a different story. Now you're like, well, let's go make a cool trip out of it. Some of the young guys are probably like, yeah, let's go. I'm excited. But as far as just, like, the All-Star game in itself, I don't know. It's for the fans and the kids. That's cool. Go out there and show off your skill.
Yeah. I just think, again, the NHL can't get out of its own way. It wasn't hyped up. They didn't do anything with it. And then you do stuff like send John Gibson instead of Trevor Zegras for Anaheim. It's like, come on, for the love of God, hockey, just figure it out. Figure it out one time. Like, just do one thing where you don't shoot yourself in the foot as a league. Like, it's just, that's the type of guy you, what, you think you're going to go to the All-Star game to watch John Gibson? Like, what are you doing?
You don't watch goalies in the All-Star game anyway, really. You know, there's so Dominic Hasek doing crazy stuff. Yeah. Like, no one cares. They're just making a save. And John Gibson just gets in the way anyway, right? He's not, like, very acrobatic. But, no, so Trevor Zegras isn't going, are you kidding me? All those kids. I'll tell you this. We could have on Wayne Gretzky on the podcast. The kids don't care. No offense to Wayne, great guy. But if you get Trevor Zegras on, all these young kids go crazy. Andy coaches a Triple-A team here, and all they care about is Trevor Zegras doing that thing over the net, whatnot, this, that, and the other, and he's not representing? Oh, man. Now you got me rattled.
I know. It's stupid. It's just so stupid. It's just that's the NHL. So they're one of the just poorest run leagues in terms of how they market their own players. I still think it's baseball is the king of that because they have CBA negotiations where they literally go out and they'll be like, these guys are greedy idiots. You will trust us. It's like, we'll sell the game. Hockey's just the runner up though. So you're the runner up to baseball. Cam Jansen, this was so great, man. You lived up to the hype. Thanks so much for making time for us today and bending the knee to the real 590.
You guys, right? You're going to get me in trouble. Yeah. Right on, guys. And enjoy the weekend, guys, and we'll talk after this week. See you guys.
See you, Cam. See you, man. That's Cam Jansen, former NHL forward, co-host of the Cam and Strick podcast, and co-host of Hot Take Central on 590 The Fan in St. Louis. Again, the bizarro world 590 where they have a hockey show in Missouri. I will say this, like, I look at how someone makes the NHL living in Missouri, the thing that he just outlined, how Americans from the South must look at Canadians like Corey Connors who make the PGA Tour, where it's like, how are you here? You know, like, how did this end up happening to you? You just lived in the States full time? You're not from Canada. What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I sometimes forget that Missouri exists. I've never been, but, like, you know,
we're about to watch Patrick Mahomes this weekend. You're like, yeah. I forget Missouri exists. It's where Patrick Mahomes plays.
Just the idea that, like, oh, yeah, that's like, that's Missouri, you know?
I forget that Missouri exists is a good line.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, other than, you know, you watch those couple games, but yeah, anyway, yeah. I just, yeah, I'm excited for this Blues game. He fed into the idea of, like, it's kind of a toss-up in a sense. Like, the Blues have been hot, but they're missing some players. The Leafs have great, obviously, firepower, but they're on a little bit of a cold streak, and they're getting some players back. So it's very intriguing. I know we talked about it at the top of the show, what's our most exciting narrative. So I think that Leafs game definitely I don't know if it's one I can bet on, I'll tell you that, because it seems scary.
I just still can't believe that the NHL didn't send Trevor Zegras to the All-Star game. It's got to be one of the stupidest things that I can remember a league doing that's All-Star related. That, like, Adrian Kempe is going for the Pacific Division. Jordan Eberle is going. I know they have to have representation for every team, but it's like, see, can I just tell you the Pacific Division All-Stars quickly that are not Trevor Zegras? Thatcher Demko, John Gibson, Timo Meier, Adrian Kempe, Jordan Eberle. Those players are all going over Trevor Zegras. Imagine in your life thinking that this was a good idea to send John Gibson over that player, who is genuinely one of the most exciting young guys in the NHL, and someone who, if you are a fan of a team out east, you absolutely want to see in an All-Star game. That's absolutely a draw, somebody with that skill. God, NHL, be dumber.